The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jimmy Sengenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS, live from, you heard the man, the Western Conservative Summit 2023, hashtag WCS23 on all the social media. It is, of course, put on by the Centennial Institute here at Colorado Christian University. Actually, we are located at the Colorado Convention Center, but they are at Colorado Christian University. We're outside the Belco Theater. If you are coming to the summit today and you're swinging on by, be sure to say hi. Would love to see you here on location at the Western Conservative Summit, a great opportunity to connect and interface and interact and engage and have fun with fellow conservatives from not just around Colorado, but around the country. 303-696-1971 is our telephone number. If you'd like to join in to the festivities, we will have opportunities to call in, especially earlier on in the program. You can also email me 24/7, 365. I'm at 710knus.com's website on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show page. I'm also accessible via email at jimmysengenberger.com. Keep in mind, there's no A, I, or U in Sengenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sengenberger is easy. And, of course, a couple of ways to follow yours truly on social media. You can go to Twitter on the Twitterverse. At Seng Center is my handle. That's Seng with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. And, of course, on Facebook, facebook.com/JimmySengenbergerPro, or just search Jimmy Sengenberger Media Personality on Facebook. Good to be with you again today. We were here at the summit yesterday as I was filling in for George Brockler, and that was a great time for 4 hours checking in with folks. We're having some speakers who will be dropping by. I do know we've got Frank Gaffney, noted national security guy, coming over to the booth at some point. We'll also be joined towards the end of the show by Cheryl Chumley, the opinion editor of the Washington Times, and we'll see who else we've got dropping by. It's always in flux when you are at a place and an event, an occasion like the Western Conservative Summit. Yesterday, there was a good lineup of folks that spoke and gave their thoughts on issues of the day, including C.J. Pearson, who's with Prager University. Our forthcoming guest, Cheryl Chumley, spoke yesterday. She's, again, with the Washington Times. Former Arkansas Governor, U.S. presidential candidate Asa Hutchinson. Congresswoman Harriet Hageman as well. She is the congresswoman from Wyoming. Last night at the Friday evening festivities, Senator Josh Hawley gave his speech and addressed the crowd. Isabel Brown, who's from Colorado, she also did so. I think she's with PragerU, if I recall correctly. Congresswoman Lauren Boebert. I was not able to be at the evening session last night, so I didn't get to see her, but I bet it was a rousing speech, as is always the case with Lauren Boebert. And Eric Metaxas, the Salem radio host, he spoke as well. So great lineup of folks yesterday. Coming up today on the agenda, Congressman Doug Lamborn and Congressman Ken Buck will be speaking. Eric Erickson is with Americans for Prosperity and a radio host. He will be speaking as well. Tulsi Gabbard tonight at the Saturday evening festivities, the former congresswoman from Hawaii, and Seth Dillon, CEO of the Babylon Bee, the conservative and Christian answer to the left wing, The Onion. So those are just a few of the folks who will be speaking at the Western Conservative Summit. Some noted names as we rock and roll here today again at the summit on 710 KNUS. Also coming up, we will be joined by Nate Marshall. Nate is a former fire inspector, fire marshal, actually, I think a fire chief formerly as well. And he is going to come on and talk with us about what happened with the Marshall fires, what we have learned specifically about the Marshall Fire causes, as far as the two different causes that investigators have now found. And you know what? It is exactly what Nate Marshall predicted and or concluded early last year. He said, okay, here's the two reasons that are likely causes of this. And it turned out to be exactly correct. So we will check in with Nate Marshall coming up about the Marshall fires in just a bit. Also, of course, the big news of yesterday, really came out on Thursday, and that would be that former President Donald Trump has been indicted on 37 counts, we now know, seven different charges relative to Mar-a-Lago and classified documents. Let's play a couple of cuts here to fill you in. Former President Trump, in cut seven, he insisted, this is just a snippet of his video that he released on Thursday, saying and insisting that he is an innocent man. Cut seven, Leroy.
I'm an innocent man. We will prove that again. 7 years of proving it, and here we go again. Very unfair, but that's the way it is.
I'm an innocent man, very unfair. That's the way that it is. Well, following this, we heard yesterday Jack Smith, the special counsel tapped to investigate in cut eight. He made his announcement of what the indictment is and unsealed the indictment. Take a listen, cut eight.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with felony violations of our national security laws, as well as participating in a conspiracy to obstruct justice. This indictment was voted by a grand jury of citizens in the Southern District of Florida, and I invite everyone to read it in full to understand the scope and the gravity of the crimes charged. The men and women of the United States intelligence community and our armed forces dedicate their lives to protecting our nation and its people. Our laws that protect national defense information are critical the safety and security of the United States, and they must be enforced. Violations of those laws put our country at risk. Adherence to the rule of law is a bedrock principle of the Department of Justice, and our nation's commitment to the rule of law sets an example for the world. We have one set of laws in this country, and they apply to everyone. Applying those laws, collecting facts, that's what determines the outcome of an investigation. Nothing more and nothing less.
Is that it, or were there some political motivations here? How does this look? Look, reading up on the indictment, I didn't get the chance, didn't have the time to read the indictment itself, but reading up on it and some of the analyses from the likes of Andrew McCarthy, let me just say it does not look particularly good for him. But at the same time, things don't look good for Joe Biden. Yet, will they go after him? It's a different question. It's an important question. And we will see, and we will talk throughout the show, I am sure, about the Trump indictment. I've got some thoughts on that. But we have somebody who swung right on by here joining us at the KNUS booth at the Belco Credit Union Theater. Jonathan Hollerman, Deputy Director of the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security. I'm glad you came over here this early in the morning. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, Jimmy. I'm glad to be on.
So what is the U.S. Task Force on Homeland Security?
So the U.S. Task Force on Homeland Security is an EMP task force. It's a congressional EMP committee that was started under Dr. Peter Pry, the late Dr. Peter Pry. And our main focus is convincing this government to try and harden the electric grid and protect the American people from a long-term grid collapse.
Seems critical to me when we're talking about the electric grid. We are so behind in the times.
We are. The United States electric grid is every aspect of human life revolves around the electric grid. Food, interstate trucking, gas pumps, your banking, the radio, TV, internet. Every aspect of human life revolves around it. And if we don't harden that electric grid, we're kind of playing with fire right now.
So when you say harden the electric grid, what does that mean?
So the America's Achilles heel is its high voltage transformer. So high voltage transformers step up and step down power across long running transmission lines, distribution lines. And they take between 18 and 24 months today to be built. And they come from South Korea and Germany. And they're just largely unprotected from cyber, from physical attacks, from solar flares, from an EMP. And if you lose those high voltage transformers, you're not getting the first one into this country for 18 months. Mm-hmm. So in the case of an EMP, solar flare, or any of those situations, you could take down the American electric grid and we could be without power for 18 months. And the American people have no idea that this is such a threat.
And this is especially so when you have increasing pushes to electrify our society, to move from gas stoves and into electrical stoves and to have all these electric charging stations and all these things. And yet if you don't have a modernized, transformed electric grid that is hardened, as you're saying, but also just able to deal with all the capacity issues, that ain't going to work.
It's not, and it's actually bigger than that because, like I mentioned it at the beginning, it's every aspect of human life. If we lose the electric grid, the Congressional EMP Commission, which was a bipartisan commission that looked at this 20 years ago, told Congress that 90% of Americans would die within the first year without electricity. We just don't have the life skills to live without electricity. There's no infrastructure to live without electricity these days. I mean, you're talking about basically, what's at the grocery stores is all that's ever going to be there. And when that runs out, right, nobody knows how to grow their own food for a year or more and then root cellar it. And, yeah, it'd be an end of civilization event for this country. Let's call it that. And the problem is the government is just kicking the can down the road because the electric utility lobby is so powerful. They spent over $1 billion. That's $1 billion with a B. Over the last 10 years, lobbying Congress not to regulate the electric grid and not to harden the electric grid. And it's very unfortunate that our politicians are not acting on this because it's such a serious threat.
What are the cost implications of this? I know that it's like you can't put a price on things like hardening the electric grid, but there is a price.
So,
right?
Yeah, that price fluctuates. I mean, it depends on how deep you go because we talked about the high voltage transformers, hardening those. You need to harden some power plants. There's other critical infrastructures like water and sewage, right? I mean, if you have a grid down event, you still want your sewage to go down the toilet. You still want water to come out of your faucet. Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of industries that you can include, but the price tags, again, this is just estimates. The price tags I've seen is between 40 and 50 billion, but that's like what we give to Pakistan each year. I mean, that's a lot of money, but in the scheme of government today, that's a drop in the bucket, and it's just sad that they're not doing it.
Given the national security reasons for this, I mean, it does seem like I'm very cautious about spending money. We spend way too much, but it does seem like one area that could be an effective use of taxpayer dollars, because that's the fundamental role of government, right? To provide for national security.
Absolutely. I'm a free market guy, and I think the government spends way too much money. But I mean, like you said, this is the single thing that could destroy this country. And the thing is all of our enemy nations know this. China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, this is first strike territory for them. Cyber attacks on our grid and EMP attack on our grid. Because if they can accomplish that on day one of World War III, there's no response. I mean, we cannot respond. They win the war without firing a single bullet at a single American soldier. The 99% of the U.S. military bases in this country are reliant on civilian electric grid. They have backup power for 1 to 2 days on their bases. They get their food on the base every day or two on a truck, just like everybody else. They've already told Congress that if there was a long-term loss of electric grid, it's not going to be like Hollywood. There's not going to be no box trucks rolling down the road handing out MREs. There is literally no response. FEMA has zero response for a nationwide electric outage. So you are on your own and making plans for your family and having an idea of where you're going to go, what you're going to do, and what you're going to eat.
Yeah.
Would be wise.
Oh, I can't imagine our society being able to function in those conditions, let alone protect everybody who needs protection. Jonathan Hollerman has stopped by here at the 710 KNUS 10, Deputy Director of the U.S. Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Just two final things, and I appreciate you coming by this morning. Number one, what's your background?
Okay, so my background, I'm a former military SEER instructor, survival, evasion, resistance, and escape. I am obviously the U.S., the deputy director at the U.S. Task Force on National Homeland Security. I have a company called Grid Down Consulting. I sit on the board of directors of Impact America. I'm a member of the Joint Services Electromagnetic Defense Task Force, where we war gamed this for 3 days and realized that there is no response from the government. There is no response from the military, and it's going to be a complete...
Scarily, I believe that. And so survival background, you have a real understanding of what it would take to survive. So let me ask you this fundamental question as we wrap up. Is there the will? Can we find the will to do what you're arguing is necessary to harden the electric grid and protect the American people?
Yeah, so for 20 years, that's been the million-dollar question. And there's organizations like our the EMP Task Force, the Secure the Grid Coalition, Secure Our Grid. Everybody needs to go out today and watch Grid Down Power Up at griddownpowerup.com. It's a documentary that explains this whole situation, where we're at, and directed by David Tice. And if you want to hear more about this, we're at the Western Conservative Conference Summit, I'm sorry, and we're going to be in Workshop 4 at 1:30, and we're going to be speaking about this some more and giving some more details on what can be done.
So you're working with Tina Francone?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I know Tina well. So, excellent. Hey, Jonathan Hollerman, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate you stopping by, and best of luck.
All right, thank you so much, Jimmy.
All right, once again, we are at the Western Conservative Summit, 710 KNUS. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more, including Nate Marshall, former fire chief and fire investigator, joining us to talk about what really happened with the Marshall fires. Keep it here. Denver's local talk leader, live from the Western Conservative Summit at the Colorado Convention Center. News Talk, 710 KNUS. 28 minutes after 6 o'clock, Jimmy Sengenberger back with you here on Denver's local talk leader, News Talk 710 KNUS, live from the 2023 Western Conservative Summit at the Colorado Convention Center. We are right outside the Belco Theater, where all the festivities are happening, at least for the main stage speakers. Then not too far by, there's some great exhibits with vendors from all sorts of different organizations gathered together talking about what they are doing in the ever-expanding conservative movement. 303-696-1971 is our telephone number if you'd like to join in to the festivities. You can also email me via my website, jimmysengenberger.com. Remember, there's no A-I or U in Sengenberger, all E's all the time. So we have news that broke this week from Colorado. And the Denver Gazette puts it this way about the Marshall Fire. Remember that from last year? Absolutely tragic and devastating in Superior and elsewhere in the surrounding area. After 17 months of intense investigation, the Boulder County Sheriff's Office Thursday announced the Marshall Fire was actually two separate fires started by two separate causes within 2,000 feet and an hour apart. The first, human-caused, by a fire at property owned by 12 tribes that was left to smolder 6 days earlier. Investigators said the fire had been covered in dirt, but on December 30th, 2021, the high wind event uncovered and reignited the smoldering fire at about 11 a.m., Boulder County Sheriff Curtis Johnson said. The second cause sparked at around noon by an unmoored Xcel Energy power line near the Marshall Mesa trailhead, Johnson said. So I forgot it was at the very, very tail end of 2021, not beginning of 2022, although it continued on with all the devastation and more. But at the time, I remember, I think I was filling in one of the shows, and I was joined by our guest here on the program who identified both of these as probable causes for the fire. And lo and behold, it turns out true. Nate Marshall is the past fire chief of in Las Cruces, New Mexico. He's also been a fire investigator for Steamboat Springs, for a Foothills Fire. He's a certified fire explosion investigator, and he's got other credentials. This guy knows about fire, and he pinned the 12 Tribes fire start and the Excel power line as well. I wanted to bring him on for a few minutes on the program. Nate, good morning. Welcome back to 710 KNUS.
Hey, Jimmy. I just wanted to clarify, though, that I was the county fire chief and not the city fire chief.
County. Okay, there you go.
Yeah, I had Doñana County.
Doñana County, absolutely. All right, yeah. Well, thank you for clarifying that. But either way, you've been a fire chief, fire marshal. You have investigated fires. How were you able to tell that these were the causes? And what more can you tell us about the conclusions that they reached as far as what sparked these flames?
Well, looking, you know, all the way back to when I called you back in January 2022, I looked at some of the basically some of the aerial stuff, some of the video footage that started to emerge, people were posting it on YouTube and stuff, and it just kind of made sense just from my past experience. I've been working on some of the fires, like right before I went to New Mexico, I was on the Hayman Fire and some other of those fires, High Meadow. You know, I was basically in Jefferson County, and Steamboat had a lot of fire, so a lot of fire experience in wildland fire. And just kind of made sense that, hey, this fire is coming out of the it just looks like there's no explanation of it, and it had been a little bit of rainy. Because I'm focusing on page 4, really, of the investigation report and talking about Matthew V's response on December 24th. And it's, you know, there's a lot of questions that I have about that, and it just made sense that it looked like, you know, there's going to be some issues with power lines, obviously, because of the high winds. This is a high wind event.
Right.
I mean, you have huge winds. So obviously power lines are going to be down, and that ended up being the case. And I figured that would be kind of, you know, you see those power lines going all the way up 93 in the Boulder from Golden. So that just made sense that there would be some power line issues. But what I started focusing on was those videos. Those videos started coming out maybe Saturday or Sunday of that weekend, and people started posting it, and it looked like, hey, it came from that 12 Tribes property. And look at Google Earth and all that stuff before, you know, you're able to just see where the pattern was. Once they showed kind of the aerial pattern, you know, the Forest Service will do mapping. They use those planes. And so they were able to put a map up, like, within a few days of showing where the fire went. And it just came right from that property. So it wasn't that, I mean, it really wouldn't have taken a real expert on fire investigation to know that.
Well, but here's the thing that I'm curious about, Nate Marshall, is you identified these two probable causes back in with me in January of 2022. We are now basically a year and a half out from that, and only now have they announced those causes. Why did it take so long?
Well, I think they brought in a lot of experts. I mean, I'm reading some that they brought in electrical engineers. Obviously, Xcel's got some, you know, they've got some expertise. And, you know, they've got the deep pockets of anybody who would be responsible for this. So I think I think in some cases they probably, you know, did their due diligence on that as far as, you know, finding the electrical causes and with the power lines and Xcel. But I think, honestly, I honestly believe that they are looking to not have a situation with 12 Tribes. I think some of the Mountain View firefighters may have been like intimidated being on that property just with the way. And I think that they may have on December 24th, it's Christmas Eve. Now, Mountain View is I'm not going to say professional because volunteers are professional too, but more of a career department. So unlike a volunteer department where it's Christmas Eve, people want to get back to their families. They left the fire still smoldering when they should not have allowed them just to continue burning and then to put dirt on the fire. They should have, you know, my responsibility as a fire chief, I'm not going or having my firefighters leave the scene until, you know, you've got water. You can bring in tankers. You can bring in trucks. You can pour a ton of water on those and make sure that those embers are smolder. So I place a lot of responsibility on Mountain View. I think that they, you know, a lot of factors But I think that, so I keep thinking that maybe the DA and the sheriff are kind of I don't know. I think maybe they just don't want to go through a whole lot of court trials and things, and they don't want to bring, you know, it's going to be very expensive to, you know, there's some civil liability, but I honestly think that their report undercuts the possibility of even people taking legal action.
You know, undercuts it.
Yeah. There's a lot of, and I see a lot of comments about it from people that are amateurs on Reddit and stuff about it. The response is like, I believe that they, I don't know, I think they're just trying to wash their hands of it.
Once again, we are talking with Nate Marshall. He's former fire marshal in chief of Doña Ana County, New Mexico, and has been a fire investigator. What can you tell us, just loosely? I don't want to get into a whole background on the 12 tribes, but what can you tell us about them that would help to explain some of the hesitancy here as to identifying them apparently not handling this fire properly as the cause? Why might they be hesitant about identifying, pinning it on the 12 tribes? And even if it wasn't saying, you're not saying it's intentional, it was accidental, but still it was on their property.
Because I believe, you know, people recognize 12 tribes as a cult, kind of like referencing Waco and the Branch Davidian. They're very... And they own the, you know, the Yellow Deli and Pearl Street Mall. And there's been some reports, you know, child abuse and, you know, abuse towards women there. And it's definitely a situation where maybe people wouldn't feel comfortable being on their property, even if they were extinguishing a fire. There could be some intimidation. And I'd also like, you know, maybe the sheriff is maybe scared of some kind of incident if they were charging criminally and try to arrest them, because there's 40-something people that live there. And that's quite a few, you know, a lot of people, who knows. So I think there may be some hesitancy on the sheriff's department, like they don't want to have a Waco situation.
So I want to ask a final question, and I appreciate that, Nate Marshall. A final question on the Marshall Fire, and then I want to broaden out to a broader question for a moment. But what lessons can and should we learn from this Marshall Fire, and now, what takeaways should people have as far as how this investigation was conducted and the, I don't know, it feels like they weren't as forthcoming as they should be when we're a year and a half later. You had pointed this out to me on the radio back a year and a half ago, and only now we're finding this out. What lessons, what takeaways?
I think the big thing we need to look at is our fire departments in Colorado and nationally. We need to look at who is running them as far as the boards, because the chiefs report to boards who are usually just, you know, they're well-intentioned, but they're amateurs. They're not, you know, and I'm not talking about like the West Metros or the South Metros, because they got a lot of experience. But in some cases, you have very inexperienced, you know, volunteer chiefs and even, you know, and some of the boards. And I think that in this case, in Mountain View, I think their procedures is they should have even checked back a day, 2 days later, taking crews back with even brush trucks, just the small little types, Fords, you know, the F-550s that they have, going back and just wetting the embers and continuing to let the, or require, you know, some way we need to check on that. We also need to look at the broader picture of, and I think that's part of the other question you have for me, is the broader, you know, looking at our forest health and our...
Yes. Yeah, I do want to ask you about forest management. I mean, you had been a fire investigator, for example, in Steamboat Springs, and you've got some wonderful wilderness there in Steamboat Springs. And when we look at these wildfires, I mean, we can see it in Canada. This week, New York City was number one for air quality, worst air quality in the world. And it wasn't that long ago that Colorado was number two.
Yeah, and it's like forest health is bad because our forests are sick. And, of course, you know, we have a lot of political from one side of the political spectrum that knows you can't touch the tree, you can't touch this, you can't do this. Well, we need to touch them. These are 100 and these are 1,000-year fires. They've happened all the way back to when the dinosaurs roamed the earth. They're going to keep happening. The thing is, we are now building into those forests. So these events are still going to happen. There is a very cost-effective way to do this. It is turning a lot of the forestry work over to the private sector, the timber and the lumber industries. The forest floors, where the leaves are and the needles, that is where the fires spread. That's how they spread fire. Fire actually goes up. It goes up a hill faster than it actually goes downhill. And so there's a lot of science behind that. It's proven fact a lot. You know, Red Rocks Community College has one of the best fire science programs in the country. And so we learned a lot about that there. But they need to actually thin the forest. And we actually need to look at a lot of fire districts like Evergreen and some other departments have these great programs where they actually have a mitigation officer. You can, citizens have to pay for it, but it's like 25 or 50 bucks for them to come out, send an inspector out to their house because, you know, the fire departments are responsible for the county. They can't go and do every property. It was estimated it cost $5 million a year for 10 years just to do Evergreen alone, and then they'd have to start over again. So you're talking about $50 million every 10 years. So there's some cost behind it. But people can call the fire districts and ask them if they can send one of their – a lot of them have specially trained wildfire mitigation inspectors. They can go out there and look at the property. And then some departments even will have a chipping program. Like they won't cut the branches. They won't cut the – but if you leave the branches in a pile, they will come by and they, you know, like Evergreen actually has a tree truck. You know, they have a big chipper. You'll come out and they'll shred it. And you pay like $100 to it. You're not going to pay $100 to a private company. You're going to pay thousands. But so people need to look at those kind of resources. And obviously there's a waiting list because a lot of people do it. So people should look at their local fire districts, you know, and if there's any kind of programs.
Yeah, this hands-off the environment mentality is terrible. And in fact, up in Canada, I've been doing reading, and they literally are like, just let it burn until it gets to a point where you actually need to intervene because it's going to start impacting people getting into property.
That was how they did it before this. Before people started moving the forest, it was almost like let it burn because that was how you made the health. You make the forest healthy in two ways. You let it burn or you remove the fuel.
Right, but you let it burn, but you want to be doing the process of removing the fuel in advance so that it doesn't spread so widely in that way.
Yeah, but I mean, you're building the mansions up in, you know, all over the place, and it's like it's infringing in the forest. It's just, you know, it's the same thing with wildlife. You're moving into the bear's inhabitat, and then you get upset when the bear comes into your yard. It's the same theory. So really people should look at that is the best thing, and people need to start getting involved with their, you know, the local fire department every day.
Without a doubt. That's right.
You know,
all right. Hey.
Special districts. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. Nate Marshall, former county fire chief and marshal of the Doña Ana County, New Mexico Fire Department and fire investigator in the past for Steamboat Springs and Foothills Fire. Really appreciate your time this morning. What a fascinating discussion, and appreciate you circling back on something that you had said. This is the explanation. A year and a half ago, and here we are. They finally have admitted it. 303-696-1971, our telephone number. What are your thoughts on all that, plus the Trump indictment? We've got more on that coming up here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show, live from the Western Conservative Summit News Talk, 710 KNUS. Good morning. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. We are 10 until 7 o'clock, live here at the Western Conservative Summit, Colorado Convention Center, as registration and check-in is about to open up. Of course, lots of festivities and a great atmosphere in the air as conservatives gathering from across Colorado and throughout the country together to hear great speakers, to engage, to interact, to network, to have an all-around good time. Although somebody who's not having a great time right now is the 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump, who Thursday afternoon it was announced, or late Thursday, it was announced he had been indicted on 7 charges related to the alleged mishandling of classified documents held at Mar-a-Lago in Florida. Well, then yesterday we had more details that came out when Jack Smith, the special counsel, released his findings and unveiled the sealed indictment. And it certainly is striking what was included in this indictment as far as the specifics, as far as what it entails, and the gravity of the situation, at least insofar as the allegations are concerned. As the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday regarding the sweeping 49-page indictment, Trump faces a total of 37 counts on 7 different charges, including willful retention of national defense information, withholding a record, false statements, and conspiracy to obstruct. On five of the counts, Trump was charged alongside his military valet, Walt Nauda, who went to work at Mar-a-Lago Resort after working in the White House. Nauda separately faces a false statements charge. The classified documents Trump kept in his boxes included information about U.S. and foreign defense and weapons capabilities, U.S. nuclear programs, potential vulnerabilities of the U.S. and its allies to military attack, and plans for a possible retaliation in response to a foreign attack, the indictment says. So this is about more than just the classification status of documents. It's also about the seriousness of some of the significant information. Quite frankly, that information about U.S. military capabilities and ally military capabilities and nuclear stuff, those kinds of things aren't really the property of any former president of the United States. That is information that belongs to the U.S. government. The U.S. government. So I can see some of the concern there, but of course you get to the question of, well, what about these Biden documents? What about the others? Well, those should come. Will they? Who knows? Probably not. It's wrong. But there is an issue here. In fact, in Cut 9, Jonathan Turley, noted George Washington University law professor, didn't mince words on his conclusions from the indictment after it was unveiled. Let's take a listen to Cut 9.
No, it is an extremely damning indictment. You know, there are indictments that are sometimes called narrative or speaking indictments. These are indictments that are really meant to make a point as to the depth of the evidence. There are some indictments that are just bare bones. This is not. The special counsel knew that there would be a lot of people who were going to allege that the Department of Justice was acting in a biased or politically motivated way. This is clearly an indictment that was drafted to answer those questions. It's overwhelming in details. And, you know, the Trump team should not fool itself. These are hits below the waterline. These are witnesses who apparently testified under oath, gave statements to federal investigators, both of which can be criminally charged if they're false. Those witnesses are directly quoting the president in encouraging others not to look for documents or allegedly to conceal them. It's damaging.
Yeah, that is a big part of this here, is that he is, there are multiple accounts of former lawyers for him in this case that have said, look, we got into these conversations about whether or not we should even keep these documents or let them know, give them up, because it would be better if they didn't exist, if I didn't have them. I mean, when you look at some of these quotes that have been released and are known in regards to things that Trump had said, he said, quote, wouldn't it be better if we just told them we don't have anything? And he asked, what happens if we just don't respond? I don't want you looking through my boxes, he told the lawyers. Let's play Cut 10. Jonathan Turley says you can't just dismiss this indictment. Cut 10.
The key here to keep in mind is that every case I've ever been involved with, the indictment was a heart stopper. You know, these are written by lawyers who are trying to convict the client. Every indictment I've ever dealt with has fallen apart to some degree once we look more carefully at what the evidence may be. But this is not an indictment that you can dismiss. There are a lot of people who are testifying under oath, and they're saying highly incriminating things with regard to these charges.
Well, in the next hour, 303-696-1971 is our telephone number if you want to join into the conversation. What do you make of this indictment? Are you shrugging it off as simply a weaponized attempt by the Department of Justice to go after the president's political opponent? Or is there more to it than that? Are you looking at it as, well, if Joe Biden doesn't face any consequences for his mishandling of documents, just like Hillary Clinton didn't get any consequences for how she handled classified information, well, then that means that we shouldn't have anything going after Trump in dealing with this. What is your standard? How do you look at this? And what are the implications of it politically? 303-696-1971. You're listening to the Jimmy Sengenberger Show live from the Western Conservative Summit here on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.